call the meeting of the Ag Policy and Finance Committee to order. It's 1 o'clock, March 24th. I'll call the meeting to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Mr. Smith, would you please take the roll call?
Chair Sundin.
Is here.
Present. Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson present.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle present.
Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R present.
Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J present.
Representative Cleborn.
Cleborn present.
Representative Lippert.
Present.
Representative Lewick.
Present.
Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson present.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We have the minutes of the previous meeting before us. Representative Vice Chair Vang, what is your preference on those minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of March 22nd, 2021.
To the committee, are there any questions or corrections on those minutes? Hearing none, seeing none, let's take a vote on this. All those in favor of approving those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Thank you. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We have three bills up today, plus an update from the department on the governor's revised budget request and federal funding. We're adjusting the agenda a bit. We're going to start with House File 600. Representative Winkler has the cannabis bill to aid in the bill processing. House File 600 is a substantial piece of legislation. We have 40 minutes blocked for this bill. Since the bill is comprehensive, I'd like to stick to the issues within the Ag Committee's jurisdiction. So we'll vote on the bill at about 1:43 at the latest so we can get the other items on the agenda resolved. Vice Chair Vang, would you like to move the bill for the author and get it before us?
I move House File 600, Third Engrossment, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. I see there's also an author's amendment to get into the shape of he'd like to present the bill, so I also move the A13 amendment.
Okay, is there any questions on the A13? Any explanation, Not hearing any. All those in favor of adopting the A13, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Okay, that motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The bill, as amended, is before us. Please tell us about your bill as it relates to agriculture, and then we'll open it up to testimony and questions. Representative Winkler, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Thank you for your time today in reviewing this bill and hopefully passing it. House File 600 legalizes cannabis for adult purposes, adult use in Minnesota. It addresses a number of criminal justice reform issues. It creates a new marketplace and a regulated marketplace for the safe use of cannabis. There's a lot we can talk about with this bill, and respecting the fact that this bill will travel through something like 15 committees before we're done, I'm trying to keep my focus on agriculture, which is a subject I know less about than most of you. So what we're doing with this bill is creating a marketplace focused on the growth, manufacture, distribution, and retail sale of cannabis in Minnesota. When we traveled the state, and as we've listened to people who have been activists on this issue for a long time, as we listen to people who see economic development opportunities around the state, we heard consistently that what people want in a cannabis marketplace is an opportunity for small and medium-sized Minnesota businesses to be successful, to create jobs and opportunity throughout Minnesota, and that we want to make sure that people who have been most adversely affected by the war on drugs have an opportunity not only to have criminal records expunged and to have their records cleared, but to have an opportunity to participate in the growth of a new business at the very foundation. And that is how this bill is currently designed. That is what we do with the agriculture provisions of this bill. We make sure that the license of the growth of cannabis is going to benefit small and very small Minnesota businesses, not large out-of-state commercial enterprises. So that is how we've structured it. We've worked very extensively with the Department of Agriculture. We have worked with hundreds of organizations and worked over the period of time with dozens of legislators to put this bill together. And so, Mr. Chair, I think I think the best use of our time, from my perspective, is not more explanation from me, but getting to testimony and then taking your questions.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. To the testifiers, there are several of you. Please be mindful of the people that are going to follow you, and let's not be redundant with our input. If you've heard it from other testifiers, there's really not a huge need to be repetitive here. So first up, please, Bridget Pinder, please. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. Bridget Pinder. Okay, we don't have a Bridget Pinder right now. How about Judson, Mr. Judson? Would you please identify yourself and continue with your testimony?
Yes, thank you, sir. My name is Judson Bemis, and I chair Smart Approaches to Marijuana Minnesota. I am also a person in long-term recovery, which means for me I have not smoked marijuana for the last 32 years. Well, we all disagree on plenty about this bill, but I think one thing we can honestly all agree on is the weather in Minnesota is nothing like the weather in Jamaica. I say this because the season in Minnesota to grow marijuana outside is too short and too cold to produce a high-quality crop. Therefore, most of the marijuana that would be grown for sale in Minnesota would need to be grown indoors. This may overcome one of the most common complaints with fields of marijuana, which is the incredible stench the crop produces. Because of the need to grow indoors, regulators should anticipate four issues. Water. Marijuana requires an extraordinary amount of water, approximately equal to the amount to raise almonds. Energy. The consumption derives from both the quantity of marijuana grown and the energy intensiveness of the crop. Study shows that it is almost four times more energy intensive than coal or petroleum industries and six times as energy intensive as the industry average. Pollution. Researchers behind a new study in the journal Nature Sustainability estimate that the emissions associated with growing 1 ounce of cannabis indoors is about the same as burning 7 to 16 gallons of gasoline. And on average, the model found that producing a kilogram of dried cannabis released the equivalent of between 2 to 5 tons of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. In the black market. Despite the blatant marijuana industry attempt to force every county to accept marijuana businesses, a clause in this bill that does not appear in any other state's legislation, the black market will exist as people try to circumvent all legal issues. Discharges from these operations have included normally banned pesticides, fertilizers, and heavy metals. We urge the committee to consider these issues before passing this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Bemis. Next up, we'll be looking to Charles Levine from Hemp Acres. Would you please take a couple minutes, identify yourself, and offer your testimony?
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me. My name is Charles Levine. I'm the owner of Hemp Acres. We are a hemp company based in Waconia, Minnesota, that have been involved in the pilot program since 2016. I am a strong proponent for this bill so that we can expand beyond the idea of cannabis as a whole. Our business focuses on growing and processing hemp, and one you can kind of see that the whole cannabis plant is all related. We would like to be able to grow THC varieties for grain production as well. It's kind of looking at the whole plant differently and seeing that it's more than just, you know, getting high and growing indoors like that. It's a much bigger agricultural opportunity to actually make food out of it from the grain, which is what we specialize in. We started with one employee. We are now to 7 employees, and we're building out a 37,000 square foot processing facility to utilize the grain and the fiber, which is our main focus. But we also want to take use of these medicinal components of the plant, and CBD and THC are really very similar, and the whole processes of understanding the medicines behind it and food and textiles and everything go much beyond just getting high. So we're strong in favor of this, and hope Hemp Acres can take part of this program. And just because it's an opportunity that I probably won't get again, I want to show you guys just a sneak peek of a hemp processing facility on a small scale. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Next up, we have Angela Dawson from 40 Acres Cooperative. Would you please identify yourself and offer your testimony? Angela Dawson.
Hello. Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Angela Dawson. I am a fourth-generation reclamation farmer, meaning I'm restarting and reclaiming the farming legacy started by my great-grandparents. I'm also the founder and president of 40 Acre Co-op, a farmer co-op based in northern Minnesota with a national reach enrolling members in 7 states and a tribal territory. 40 Acre Co-op's mission is to advance agricultural development and economic equity for Black, Indigenous, and other excluded farmers. And we center Black farmers because of the unique history that Black farmers have with the USDA and the Farm Credit System. We work to reverse some of the economic conditions that have resulted in the decrease of the population of Black farmers by 90% over the past 50 years. We create training programs, financial models, research, and produce high quality hemp genetics for our members. In our short lifespan, we've proven our concept, and we've created demand for our services with a waiting list of over 150 people who want to join the co-op. Frankly, the co-op actually stands at the gap of several pain points in agriculture in Minnesota. We are addressing needs in our headquarters of Pine County. It's one of the poorest counties in the state of Minnesota, with limited jobs and farmers who are working on slim margins, and while residents also lack access to healthy food. And youth do not have job and hopeful opportunities, which leaves them victim to other crimes. Prohibition of cannabis has had also a tremendous impact on Black and brown lives physically. You are probably already aware that if you're Black, you're more than 5 times likely in Minnesota to be arrested for possession of the same amount of cannabis. And so the glaring need to introduce social equity standards in our regulation is also apparent. I just want to close by saying that farmers are saddled with near record debt right now. More farmers are declaring bankruptcy at rising rates and selling off their farms amid uncertain futures because of climate change and lowering commodity prices. Farmers are also among the most likely to die by suicide than other occupations, according to the Centers for Disease Control. Now, creating a safe access to cannabis in Minnesota with specific policies that address social equity will result in a just and fair cannabis industry and economic vitality that our rural communities need and our farmers need. And we very much support this bill and hope that you will vote to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela Dawson. I'm going to take a little bit of privilege here, Chair's privilege. At some point, because of your close proximity to God's Country, also known as Carlton County, I would really like to, if it's convenient for you, to visit your facility or your operation. And so if you could pass on your personal information or your to the committee chair or the committee administrator, I'd really appreciate that. I'd like to connect with you. You seems like you have a lot to offer. So thank you. Next up, we have Jim Erickson, Minnesota Hemp Growers. Please identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony, Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm delighted to be here. I'm representing the Minnesota Hemp Cooperative, Hemp Growers Cooperative. I believe we're the second cooperative behind the testifier right now for hemp growers in Minnesota. I can thank Representative Vang for getting me involved and talking to me about the hemp, how hemp can serve the state of Minnesota and its farmers. And I took the plunge, and last year was a first-year grower and saw the need that the first-year growers, like myself, small growers in southwestern and eastern Minnesota, needed to the ability to talk to each other as a co-op can do for marketing purposes, for seed purchase purposes and the like. I want to thank Representative Winkler, Leader Winkler, for taking the time and effort to pass this bill. The co-op, Minnesota Hemp Growers Co-op, is 100% in favor of the concept that he talked about in his lead remarks and all the work he's done throughout the state and passing this through 15 committees. We leave the committees to do the detail work. We support the concept. And I'd like to close, Mr. Chairman, by quoting, we have a website. It's mnhempcoop.com. And I want to quote that website, if I can bring it up here. Where did it go? Why am I here? It goes. I'd like to quote Representative Vang. You'll see this quote from her on our website, mnhempcoop.com. Representative Vang says, "Hemp farming, whether for CBD, wellness, grain, fiber, or other industrial products, will be an increasingly important part of the Minnesota agricultural scene. The state of Minnesota can help in that growth, especially in providing for sustainable farming." And I might want to add for more minority participation in that. We support the bill. It'll expand the marketplace for a whole new and growing sector of Minnesota agriculture. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Vang, and thank you, Leader Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Up next, we have Stephen Sherman from Good Harbor Hemp. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Sherman is off the agenda, and that's Dr. Mai Mua was going to replace him, but she is not on the call yet, so I think we need to go to Michael Chaney.
Yeah, please alert me if the testifier reappears. Okay. We have Michael Chaney from Project Sweetie Pie. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Mr. Chaney. You're muted there, Mr. Chaney.
Testing. What, can you hear me now?
We're good now. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, Michael Chaney, Executive Director, founder of Project Sweetie Pie. Tools of the trade. Last count, lost track of the lashes landed over time across the bloodstained backs of poor blacks and poor brown bodies born in America, victims of blatant oppression and glaring disparities, will all be haunted forever by the brutal image of George Floyd gasping for breath, a knee on his neck, life cut short by Officer Friendly. Further proof that Minnesota nice sure can be nasty. How do you spell relief when we continue to institutionalize inequity, when we continue to create public policy, laws that legislate racial bias, bigotry, and perpetuate hate? As the gavel falls, let the pendulum swing today toward freedom and justice for all. Let equity and inclusion be the seeds that fuel our future. I'm an activist and organizer, started Project Sweetie Pie in 2010 when they were trying to close North High. Actually was the individual who moved forward to create the Agri Grant 4 or 5 years ago and created funding through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for growing urban farming across the state. a program that's been very successful. And I'm pleased to say that actually for the first time, the collaboration that I have with the University of Minnesota, we were awarded funding from the Agri Grant. And so I'm here today, again, as an ag patriot who realizes that there's been a longstanding love-hate relationship between communities of color and the U.S. Agriculture, where now only 1.5% of Black farmers in this nation. And so here we are at a unique point in time where the whole nation is looking to Minnesota, looking to you legislators to see how you will advance and grow agriculture and how you will be inclusive in terms of establishing a welcome hand to farmers of color who will be fortunately maybe blessed with some of the $5 billion that Senator Warnock and others are starting to kind of create and try to dismantle institutional racism. And so I'm here to support House File 600, as I've also have been working diligently with Representative Thompson on the Philandra Castillo bill, which also looks to advance $10 million for farmers of color. This newfound industry is a pathway not only to higher education, but it's also a pathway to prosperity. And so I urge each and every one of you to realize that you can either advance equity and inclusion or you can stall it. And so let's make history here today and move this legislation forward so that we are on the right side of history. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you for your sentiments, Mr. Cheney. We can go back to Bridget Pinder. Is Bridget Pinder available at this point?
Mr. Chair, she's not on the call.
Any other testifiers appearing?
No.
Okay. All right. We have written testimony submitted by Sensible Change Minnesota. Please observe that and include that in your thought process. We have department professionals available for maybe technical questions. But seeing no further, in addition to this testimony, we're ready to move on to Majority Leader Winkler. Any comments? Okay, questions. Questions from the committee, excuse me. Questions from the committee to the author. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Winkler. Looking at your bill, you talked about one of your goals being to encourage smaller producers to get into the business. How would you, in your bill, prevent or discourage your large corporate greenhouse type operations from getting involved in this production?
Thank you, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, first of all, we prohibit vertical integration except for micro businesses. So you cannot cultivate, manufacture, distribute, and retail cannabis all with one operation unless you are very, very small. So that's one way. We have three tiers, kind of, well, frankly, micro, small, middle, and large of license size. It's based on canopy, so the amount essentially of growth space that you have to grow cannabis is the limiting factor. And we give Minnesota middle and small businesses a four-year head start as we start this enterprise in the state, as we develop this industry. Those Minnesota-based smaller industry or businesses will have 4 years before larger competitors can come into the marketplace. Furthermore, we have allocated state funds through grants for social equity applicants who would have the ability to get not only trained and on the industry and help to navigate the industry, but also get startup capital. So we have multiple prongs in our effort to help small operators in Minnesota be successful in developing this new business before we have a full wide open marketplace. And even when we have a full fully formed marketplace, we limit the number of licenses for large operators so that we keep a balance within this industry. You know, and by starting from scratch, by creating something new, we have an opportunity to do it this way that I think we would have in very, you know, very difficult to do in existing well-established industries.
Thank you. Any follow-up on that, Representative Anderson?
Yeah, please, Mr. Chair. Another question for the representative. One of the testifiers mentioned that because of our more northern climate, a good grade of cannabis couldn't be grown outdoors in Minnesota. So do you envision most of this growth being indoor operations or outdoor operations? Representative Winkler.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I expect that most of it will be indoors. There may be some limited outdoor growing, but I do think most of it will be indoors. Mr. Bemis also referenced energy and water consumption, and I would like to point out that we establish standards in the bill and task the Cannabis Management Board, which has overall oversight over this industry, to develop water and energy standards and rules that the cultivators have to follow. And the Department of Agriculture also has existing and can provide additional pesticide, fertilizer, soil, and other kinds of regulations that are more traditionally in agricultural sphere. So we have the regulatory tools in place to address the concerns raised by Mr. Bemis, which I think are legitimate. It's one of the things that we dove deep into when we were looking at these issues a year and a half ago in developing this bill.
Anything further, Representative Anderson?
Yeah, if we're not so scrunched for time, one more question, Mr. Chair, would that be okay?
Please do.
And this question would be for anybody from the Department of Agriculture who would be available to testify. And that relates to, you know, the last couple of years, we've just really gotten into the production of industrial hemp in Minnesota. And the department has been tasked with testing all of these fields for high levels of THC. And I guess in some cases, some of these fields had to be destroyed. So I'd like to get the department's feel here, or what they feel about moving into this entirely new industry. And it is agricultural. Growing of this crop would be agricultural, and what the department feels they would have to come forward with in terms of any regulations and such regarding cannabis in relation to what they're already doing with industrial hemp.
We have two people from the department with us who would like to pick up on that question.
Mr. Chair.
Whitney Place, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Whitney Place. I serve as Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Representative Anderson, yes, we've had an industrial hemp program in Minnesota now for the last 6 years. We are just this year moving into the regulations provided under the 2018 Farm Bill. So we will be under USDA regulations starting this growing season. Under those regulations, we do have, you know, our hemp farmers are completely under the federal program. The passage of this bill with legalization of adult use cannabis would all be separate and regulated under the Board of Cannabis Management. And so we view these programs as very separate, and our licensees would still have to stick with all of the federal regulations under the Farm Bill.
Okay.
Thank you. Is that satisfactory for you, Representative Anderson?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. Next up, we have Representative John Thompson. Representative Thompson, please.
Thank you so much, Chair. And my question is to the author of the bill. Even when I have to ask a hard question, I'm sorry, I have to. But even when we talked, when I was listening and looking at just the hemp growers who were here, I didn't see much, you know. And so what I want to know, I'll get right to the question. What I want to know is, What provisions can you take in this particular package that would do something a little different than always what always happens, like leaves communities of color out, in particular African-American communities, out of this market completely? There aren't many black hemp growers here represented here on this meeting at all. But in this particular market right here, I know everybody's interested in getting a piece of the pie. And what happens is, like someone else just said, big corporations come in and scoop down on this money. And some of the people who've been drastically affected by cannabis are people of color. My question is, what can you do in this provision to make sure that African-American communities get a piece of this pie also? And I just wanted to get right to the question. So pardon my brash question.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, I think Ms. Dawson may have something that she would weigh in on as well, but I would say that what you just described is exactly what we are trying to do with this bill. The reality is that we cannot use race as an explicit factor because of the way the U.S. Constitution is interpreted. So we have looked for proxies that will best represent the ways in which particular communities have been affected. And so in our bill, our social equity license, which designates a certain number of licenses for social equity applicants, we use a definition of people who live in certain zip codes which are associated with income. And we did extensive research and determined that income and zip code was the closest approximation we could get under existing data and under the law as we have to deal with it. We also create a task for the Cannabis Management Board to do research and determine through data which communities have been most heavily policed for purposes of drug law enforcement. And so with that data, they can then better target those communities, not only for the social equity applicants that I described, but also for community grants. We put money back into those communities directly, not just for getting into the cannabis business, but for other community development purposes. So that's, on top of that, capital. Access to capital is one of the biggest barriers. It's a barrier that is reflective of our racial disparities in Minnesota. So that's why we put appropriations in the bill for access to capital from state sources for people who are starting at the beginning. And if we focus on having smaller businesses, that means you need less capitalization to start. So you are effectively creating an opportunity for people with less access to capital to get a foothold in the marketplace earlier than others. So it's the bill reflects the work of a lot of people, including people on this committee, who really dove deep into these issues to figure out what is the state of the art, what's the best that we can do under the Constitution. What are the barriers that exist? How can we overcome them? And then how can we do so in a way that is something that can be implemented and carried forward and learn lessons from other states?
Thank you, Representative Winkler. We're running up against the clock. So I guess the next hand up was Nathan Nelson. Representative Nelson, please. Let's be concise with our questions and answers.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question would be, I don't know if the MDA or the author of this would be the correct one for it, but thinking of, you know, farm programs and the U.S. Farm Bill, and, you know, under the programs there, how would this work? Right now it's, you know, the designation between a Class 1 and Class 2 drug. You know, for those farms that want to get into this that are in the farm program, would they be in violation of any of the rulemaking there? And how would that be handled?
Representative Winkler, please.
Mr. Chair, when it comes to federal regulations under the Farm Bill, I would like to phone a friend, probably the Department of Agriculture.
Okay, who from the department would like to answer briefly?
Mr. Chair, Whitney Place again, Assistant Commissioner.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. Yes, I think in other states, we've seen people who both want to participate in agriculture, you know, from a regular conventional crop standpoint and additionally add cannabis to their cropping system. They've set up separate entities so that they can continue to participate in those federal programs. There are still some issues that need to be worked out, as it pertains to things like banking and access to credit for a crop that is illegal at the federal level, but other states have worked those things out, and I'm confident we could do so through the Board of Cannabis Management with this bill.
Thank you. Is there a follow-up, Representative Nelson?
No, I just thank you for that, and I think that answered most of my question. I was pretty sure of the answer already. However, I think you touched on a point of, a farm making a subsidiary to do this, and I think that's maybe this is addressed in the bill somehow. But if we have a large farm and they make a subsidiary, so they're not under the farm bill exemptions, but are they able to then fit under the maybe a small or a micro farm and be eligible for this? That kind of a loophole, if you will, and that's something that probably should be looked at.
Thank you. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Leader Winkler, for bringing this important bill forward and for your work. My question is for Ms. Dawson. I was very interested in your focus on addressing racial equity in agriculture, also in addressing rural poverty, and I believe you made the statement this is an opportunity for a just and equitable beginning in this industry. I'm wondering if you can talk more about the opportunities that you see. If we pass this bill in 5 years, what sort of opportunities do you see for your co-op, for the people that you're working with, or other communities that you want to work with?
Thank you for the question. You can hear me? Yes, thank you. The opportunities are really boundless. I went and studied this model that I created here at the co-op. I did some research first in Southern Oregon and just really looked at the small town that I worked at and to study the model, and saw the economic development just in that small area. Very much reminded me of Pine County in terms of the employment rates, the poverty rates there, the lack of fresh food and local food there. And so when I actually saw that there, and I actually saw the community changing with the legalization, and saw the high schools getting funded, and saw the roads getting repaired in that community, that's what really kind of drove my commitment here to start the 40 Acre Co-op for Minnesota. Because in Pine County in particular, the issues that we have with the lack of grocery stores and the conditions of our roads, and really with not a whole lot of prospects for change for the young people here. And even just with what I've been able to do now with the little resources that we've had, I've already employed about 10 people locally here in the community. So if we really had a legal operation that we could scale up, and we could, even do some integration, some fully integrated models, it would really make a big difference here for the local economy. Farmers are looking for it.
Thank you very much. Next up, Representative Lewick, I'll try to press upon you the need for brevity. Representative Luke, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is this a question for the bill author? It appears on the requirements for cannabis transporting, licensing, and operations, there's a provision that states all vehicles used by cannabis transporter must be fully electric. Is that your intention that this goes into effect that in the very near future, that that would be the only vehicle that would be allowed? It'd have to be fully electric?
Representative Winkler, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, I am open to negotiation on that point. That is what the bill currently states.
Well, thank you.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. I would suggest that that would be a deal killer for anybody this day and age. It's hard enough to start a business without going out and buying one of the more very expensive vehicles out there, and particularly with the kind of transportation miles we have to deal with in Minnesota. So anyway, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I think Representative Lueck.
Please, Representative Winkler.
We're going to the Environment Committee next. We might dive into some of these issues and look at alternatives, and I'd be happy to talk with you about what other ways that we could pursue the same goal, which is to create an environmentally sustainable industry, since we're starting it from the beginning.
Okay, we'll bring the discussion to a close at this point. Majority Leader Winkler, do you have any closing comments for the committee before we renew the motion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just close by saying that legalization of adult use cannabis is coming to Minnesota one time or another. Our neighbors to the west, North and South Dakota, have pursued this. North Dakota is on the verge of passing it through their legislature. As more and more states legalize cannabis, the question is not whether we are able to stop the trend. The question is whether we are well prepared to do this right from the beginning. This bill is an effort to combine the thoughts, needs, the analysis and experience of people from across the country, people from across the state, to get this policy right. I think this bill is excellent because of the involvement of so many legislators, and I think that we have a real opportunity for Minnesota to show how this can be done well. I think the time is now to do it. We can't just sit back and hope it doesn't happen, even if we are uncomfortable with cannabis, and I would ask for your vote in support of this bill today.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Vice Chair Vang. Would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion that House File 600, Third Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources Finance.
Okay, that motion is before us. Mr. Smith, please call the vote.
Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin votes aye. Vice Chair Vang.
Aye.
Vang, aye. Representative Anderson.
No.
Anderson, no. Representative Burkle.
Burkle, no.
Burkle, no. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R, aye.
Hansen R, aye. Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J, aye.
Hansen J, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Representative Lueck.
Lueck, no.
Lueck, no. Representative Miller.
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. That's 8 ayes and 5 nays, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smith. On a vote of 8-5, that motion prevails, and the bill as amended is on to its next stop. Just a reminder that there will be additional testimony offered, so keep an eye on your emails for that. Thanks to everyone. Next up is House File 2147, Representative Anderson on County Ag Inspector Grants. So we have 15 minutes for this bill. Representative Anderson, proceed, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and it shouldn't take that long. This is a simple bill, straightforward. I've long advocated for money to go directly to our counties for work with weed control, things like that. And this idea was brought to me and seemed to make a lot of sense, that we would make a direct appropriation to our 87 county agricultural inspectors for their work back in their counties. And what I especially like, Mr. Chair and members, in the bill language is that it establishes some good criteria for these ag inspectors to be able to get additional training, confer with the department here in St. Paul, and to really do we hope to have an improved job done locally with our counties in working on some of these issues that they deal with, mainly weeds, but also other issues that the county inspectors work with. And Mr. Chair, as a testifier, I have the head of the state association for that organization, Mr. Enfield from Carver County, and he is with us, we hope, by technology, and will testify in favor of the bill today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Would you like to move House File 2147?
I would like to move the bill, Mr. Chair, to possible inclusion laid over in the omnibus finance bill.
I don't see any amendments for that bill, Representative Anderson. So we can move to Mr. Enfield if he's available for testimony. Mr. Enfield, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, members of the committee. Thank you for your time. My name is Joseph Enfield. I am the County Ag Inspector for Carver County, and I am also representing the Minnesota Association of County Agricultural Inspectors, which I am currently president-elect of. The County Agricultural Inspector position has been around since 1929. Most of us wear multiple hats. We've got only two that I'm aware of in the county that are actually full-time County Agricultural Inspector positions. The Noxious Weed Law, Chapter 18, it's a function of state, county, and local governments. The County Ag Inspector's mandated to ensure that the Noxious Weed Law is carried out within their specific jurisdictions. We, as an Ag Inspector, we are the primary technical support, education, and training for the local weed inspectors, which local weed inspectors would be the designated township official and or designated city official. When I became started wearing the County Ag hat in 2008, there were 12 individual noxious weeds. Today, there's over 46 individual noxious weeds. So the importance of the County Ag Inspector to assist and educate is vitally important to minimize the negative impacts these weeds cause agriculture, public, and private lands. I see Ag Inspector kind of as the first responder for noxious weed issues or boots on the ground. One example, back when Palmer amaranth was detected back in 2016, landowners contacted that County Ag Inspector. They were out on site verifying, doing an inspection, and then quickly contacting Department of Ag and bringing that landowner and NDA together to get resolve on eradication of that. We make over 10,000 visits with landowners every year. We also assist MDA in other programs, seed program, fertilizer, pesticide, plant pests, and recently have been asked to potentially help out with the hemp program. That could be sampling, site inspections, verifications. This past year, a quarter of the seed samples collected were done by County Ag Inspector statewide. This funding will allow us to be more proactive, to keep on top of these new and emerging weeds, and also allow us to assist MDA with these programs further. With that, I will end. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your contribution, Mr. Enfield. We have questions from the committee. Representative Cleburne, please.
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the bill, Representative Anderson, but I just have a question. Normally, if my memory serves me correct, when we're doing these bills with MDA, they usually get like 6.5% for administrative costs. And I see that this bill has a $130,000 appropriation, which is significantly higher. And that's not your usual MO, so I'm just trying to figure out what's going on here. Can you kind of help me understand that?
Representative Anderson, can you clarify this for us?
Representative Cleburne, that was an astute observation there. Yeah, I agree with you. The language came to me with a, you know, and I guess I like round numbers. They asked for $2 million, and there's 87 counties, and that's 870,000. I think, too, that the department can get by administering this for a whole lot less than $130,000 a year. So I totally agree. And we should make some major changes there in terms of that. You know, they need some money to help administer this, but yeah, you're correct. I think that number is too large, and that would be a good place to start to trim this back a little bit. So thank you for that Astute observation.
Well, it's just not your normal practice. So I was like, what is this? Okay, I could maybe see 100.
Representative Cleburne, please.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. I could understand 130 for the 2 years, but it seems a bit high for each year. So thank you so much for your understanding, and we can make some modifications there. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Lewick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a couple comments. One of the things, particularly those that haven't had to deal with this at the county level and township level, it's really important that we stay ahead of all these noxious weeds, because when we don't, we end up having to eventually use a pretty heavy hand with herbicides. That ultimately, if you don't get it stopped and under control, you're out there doing a lot of treatment to push this stuff back. So I mean, this is certainly, this investment's warranted, and it is a lot of technical skill involved there. It's important that all of our inspectors are up to date with the kind of guidance that can come out of the Department of Agriculture on new weed issues. Just the ability to detect, and then what do we do? What's the best way to eliminate or push it back? So again, this is a necessary thing, and it's kind of the agriculture's world, like aquatic invasive species is in the outdoor recreational thing. If you don't stay ahead of it, it'll get away from you, and you can have a real train wreck on your hands that actually affects the food supply. So thank you. I appreciate this bill, and it makes sense to definitely invest in this area.
Thank you, Representative Lewick and committee, for their questions and the testifier as well. I don't see any other hands up, so Representative Anderson could go ahead and renew his motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, just this three-legged stool kind of in weed control, our township officers to the county and down here to the state MDA, they work well together, and this funding would be very much appreciated. So, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 2147 be held over for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, House File 2298 is laid over. Okay, next up we have House File 2298, Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2298 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. This bill establishes an emerging farmers office at the Department of Agriculture, a dedicated emerging farmers account, a staff position on further engagement with emerging farmers, and funds to support organizations working with emerging farmers. Much of these recommendations are based on the report of the Emerging Farmers Working Group. When the working group was created, there was no budget line item dedicated to the group, and so this bill addresses the funding it needs to continue its work. We all know that emerging farmers tend to face structural inequities and barriers in the ag economy, and this bill seeks to support emerging farmers in the long run. And with that, I'll give the rest of my time to my testifiers who can talk more about the importance of this bill and the work that they do to support emerging farmers.
You froze up there for a second, Representative Vice Chair Vang. Was there an amendment to the bill?
Yes, there is an amendment. This is the A1 amendment offered by Representative Thompson.
Can we hear the A1? Please. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson, to the A1 amendment, please. Okay. We'll delay the amendment right now, but Representative Thompson, please. Are you muted? Okay. We can go to your testifiers and then we can come back to the amendment. Who's your first testifier up? That would be Jansen Hang, please.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. My name is Jansen Hang, and I am a co-founder and the executive director with the Hmong American Farmers Association. So first and foremost here, on behalf of the board of directors, farmers, and staff of the Hmong American Farmers Association, I want to thank you for your past support of immigrant farmers. And I also urge you to support our current effort with the Emerging Farming Account, House File 2298 here, in establishing an Emerging Farming Office within the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and the hiring of a full-time Emerging Farmer Outreach Coordinator to enhance our state agencies and to support and connect emerging farmers with programs and resources that will enhance our state agencies to support and connect emerging farmers with programs and resources, but also to work specifically and also in complement with the current Minnesota Department of Agriculture Emerging Farming Working Group. Furthermore, it's also to appropriate funds to support BIPOC farmers through grant so that they will have access to funds to assist and grow their farm operations. And also to appropriate funds to the Hmong American Farm Association and the Latino Economic Development Center, two immigrant-led farming organizations who would work closely together, share resources, and provide numbers of trainings and technical support to immigrant and BIPOC farmers. That overall, that this will lead to sustain a strong and vibrant local food economy with emerging farmers in Minnesota here. Just a little background. So upon arriving in Minnesota after the Vietnam War, many Hmong farmers fell back to the agricultural skills to raise their children. Hmong farmers at the forefront of the local Twin City food economy, accounting for more than 50% of all the farmers in the metropolitan area farmers market. Yet due to lack of access to land, market beside the farmers market system, financial assistance, trainings, and research, this regulated them to second-class status compared to mainstream mixed special producers here. So programmatically, HAFA focused on five key programs, where HAFA managed a 155-acre farm in Dakota County that provide land tenures to over 100 Hmong farmers, whereas we model sustainable practice and provide technical support to build soil health and fertility. Furthermore, we also assist farmers in growing their farm business acumen and support them in generating farm business plan to access microloans. We establish a bilingual, bicultural training curriculum that focuses on whole farm planning, crop mapping, and crop planning, good agricultural practice, and in fact, we instituted through the support of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the first bilingual, bicultural Hmong produce safety training to ensure that our farmer members are informed and comply with food safety modernization requirements. And lastly, HAFA, we operate a food hub that sells fresh produce grown by our farmers to seven school districts, 117 schools, 44 other retailers, institutions, and wholesalers throughout the state. So overall, this access for providing Hmong farmers with full and simultaneous access to all aspects of the food and farming industry that led to the parity between immigrant and minority and Hmong farmers and mainstream mixed vegetable producers. But due to these available resources and economic opportunities, like Hmong farmers and their families have been able to attend college, purchase equipment, and spur other businesses to hire additional workers and make additional investment. The multiplier effect of investment in BIPOC communities and into local food is extraordinary. So the Emerging Farming Account is critical in supporting state agencies and elevating immigrant farmers' capacity, increase their sense of self-efficacy, and ensure resources to sustain a vibrant local food economy that in return will allow full and simultaneous access in all aspects of the food and farming industries to over 1,000 immigrant and BIPOC farmers here in Minnesota. Overall, that it also provides equitable access for immigrant minorities and BIPOC farmers. So lastly, I believe that by supporting this bill, we're also building a stronger Minnesota and also the next generations of Minnesota farmers who are also Bangs, Yangs, Moas, Gomez, Rodriguez, Santiago's. And so I urge all of you to join our effort and support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hang. Next up, we have Henry Jimenez. Please identify yourself for the record and offer your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Ranking Member Anderson and Representative Bang and members of the committee, my name is Henry Jimenez, the Executive Director of the Latino Economic Development Center. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. I'm here in support of House File 2298 And again, I want to thank Representative Vang for her leadership with this bill, but most importantly, working to support emerging farmers throughout her career. Since 2003, LADC has supported hundreds of Latino and other immigrant-owned businesses start or expand their businesses throughout the state. In 2010, we began supporting first-time farmers, and since then, we have had the privilege to support dozens of Latino farmers. With the partnership of HAFA, we have also been able to support Hmong and other emerging community farmers access capital to start their farm in Minnesota and have provided technical assistance to many others. These are individuals who are passionate about farming, passionate about Minnesota, and who are Minnesotans. Many of them have worked in farms but have no family farming ties nor inherited land in Minnesota. These emerging farmers are individuals who want to farm in Minnesota for a living and whose family along with them become farmers. At a time when Minnesota needs more farmers, what a perfect way to address the issue of our agriculture sector is facing. Our farmers are aging and we need more to come after them. In 2018, this committee created the Emerging Farmers Work Group and was enacted with top professionals within Minnesota agriculture. For 2 years, Commissioner Peterson, Assistant Commissioner Bailey, and so many others went through a series of listening sessions, researching, and showing up in communities across the state to identifying and addressing, trying to address barriers that emerging farmers are facing. Last year, they produced a detailed report on the needs of those farmers. There is an urgent need to address the future of farming in Minnesota, to diversify and create new pathways to enter into farming. The demographics, as you all know, are changing, and we need to do all we can to support the growth and keep Minnesota as a top five agriculture state. MDA staff has worked diligently, as you all know, but they need support in addressing this need. To having a full-time staff supporting emerging farmers is a must. It can't be done by people who are not designated to do this work. The commissioner, the staff, they need staff that are dedicated to this work. So again, this is a perfect opportunity to invest, not just in a report, but to invest in the recommendations from this report and to support Minnesota farmers and emerging farmers. One last thing I would like to mention is the work that HAFA and LADC have been doing and how important it is to work with the Department of Agriculture. Last year, as we were receiving CARES Act funding, thanks to our work and to our connections with our community, we were able to disperse CARES Act funding to much needed agriculture workers and producers. And I have a particular, I'll have numbers for all of you, but Representative Anderson, I wanted to just mention out of 133 agriculture workers that we were able to help in a matter of a couple of weeks, 76 of them came from Representative Anderson's district. We helped 47 producers also receive $4,500 grants throughout the state. Again, we'd love to be able to give you the breakdown, but this is the value that partnering with organizations like HAFA and LADC bring to the state. And I urge the committee to support this bill. Again, thank you, Representative Bank, for the support and all of you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Dana Burtness. Dana Burtness, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Sundin and members, for having me here today. My name is Dana Burtness. My husband, Nick Wynn, and I run Nettle Valley Farm near Spring Grove down here in Houston County, Minnesota. I'm a pastured hog farmer. We run an incubator farm program for other emerging regenerative livestock farmers, and we are also proud Land Stewardship Project members. As many of you know, these days getting into the business of growing food can be extremely difficult if you're not born into a family with a huge amount of wealth, a huge amount of land, or let's be honest, both. That means we have fewer and fewer farmers on the land, and those farmers are running bigger and bigger farms. And without a big course correction, I'm worried that this means that someday we're gonna have basically one or two giant farm corporations per county. And that would be disastrous for rural communities and food security and so many more things. We need to invest in getting more farmers onto the land and at the same time advancing racial, gender, and economic justice in the farm and food system. And this bill invests in initiatives that will do just that, including establishing an emerging farmer account, funding HAFA and the LEDC, and most importantly, in my opinion, establishing a grant program that will go directly to BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and farmers of color. So I urge the committee to vote in support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. In addition to this testimony we just received, please note that there's written testimony from the Minnesota Farmers Union. Are there any questions of this witness, of these witnesses, or the author at this point? Seeing none. Representative Thompson, you have an A1 amendment.
Chair, thank you. The A1 amendment just inserts some language, and page 2, after line 22, inserts Black, Indigenous, or people of color into the language. This is some minor change.
Okay, would you like to move that amendment?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, Thompson moves the A1 amendment. Are there any questions on the A1? Okay, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? There's no other amendments submitted. Would you like to continue explanation of that amendment, please?
You ready for me?
Yes.
Right. It's adopted some language from $10,000 in the fiscal year 2022 is appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Agriculture to provide grants to fund urban agriculture initiatives led by persons who are BIPOC and that address fresh food access from desserts. This is a one-time appropriation and is available until June 30th, 2024, and no later than January 15th, 2022. And January 15th of 2023. The commissioner must report the grant activity and outcomes to the legislative committee with jurisdiction over agriculture finance. So this is a small amendment.
Small but important. Thank you, Representative Thompson. Are there any questions on that amendment? I see a hand up, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I got my hand up too late. I had a question on the overall bill. Sorry about that. So I'll wait.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment then? Okay, we did pass the amendment prior to this, so that motion did prevail and the amendment was adopted. I don't see any other amendments out there. Discussion on the bill, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for the bill author, Representative Vang. This is not intended to be a criticism of the bill, but do we have an actual definition of beginning farmer, or I should say of emerging farmer? Your bill had references that term exclusively, and I just want to make sure that we have that definition down so we know that, there's also a definition for young farmer, beginning farmer, but this is different, I would take it.
Representative Vang, please.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for your question. I can defer this to legal counsel to see if it's in statute, but according to the working group report, they define emerging farmers as encompassing individuals who are entirely new to farming, as well as those who've been farming for generations, but were outside the scope of traditional state and federal agriculture support programs. So that's one of the definitions they use, but I can defer to legal counsel to see if there's any in statute that defines that.
Representative Anderson, follow up.
Yeah, I would just think, Mr. Chair, that being that we use the term exclusively in this bill, I think there should be some definition that establishes just exactly what the emerging farming is. So that was my question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, is there input from the department on that as far as the definition? Is anybody available to bring some clarity to this? Patrice Bailey, are you available?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for having me. No, that definition is correct. Emerging farmers can actually run the gamut from 0 to 10 years to 56 years old, which is the average age of farmers in Minnesota. So, you know, this term is very important, especially as baby boomers are retiring and you have emerging farmers that are emerging, if you will.
Representative Anderson, anything further on that?
Well, no, I don't mean to make, you know, but most bills, when we establish programs for funding, we have definitions or make sure that we know exactly whom that funding is intended for. And that's my only concern. I just raised it. And if they feel we don't need that, that's okay with me.
Rest assured, Representative Anderson, both you and I are neither emerging or young. any other questions for the author? Okay, Representative Vang, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion for House File 2298 to be laid over for possible inclusion as amended. And I just want to say a couple closing remarks that this is a good bill. This bill is a forward-looking bill. It looks to seek to invest in the future of farming. And Representative Anderson, thank you for your suggestion. I can be open to being more clear on the definition of emerging farmers too as well.
Thank you very much. We have a little time and we could look to the department for an update on the governor's revised budget recommendations and possibly what the department knows about the federal money that we are expecting in the state. So Commissioner Peterson, welcome to the committee. Please give us a brief update of the revised budget recs as they relate to the ag, but more detailed information if possible. We have about 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes for this presentation, and please inform us on what you can share with us.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and members, again, Tom Peterson, Minnesota Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I'll just go through our budget change items quick. We just had a couple from our previous budget. The governor added and recommends in our budget, picking up some of the pass-throughs that have traditionally been in our budget that were one-timed by the legislature and the governor in the bill the governor signed in 2018. And so those include, they're kind of lumped together, but if you look, it's a total of $308,000 for what I would say are pass-throughs that pass through the agency to these entities. So $150,000 annually to the Center for Rural Policy and Development, $47,000 annually to the Northern Crops Institute, $75,000 annually to the Turf Minnesota Turf Seed Council, and that's the Turf Seed Council, not the Turf Council. They're two different things. There's a small appropriation of $100,000 annually to the Minnesota State Poultry Association. It's something that's been in our budget for a long time, since serves poultry growers since 1886, and it helps with some of their 4-H and FFA and junior exhibitors. Something you've all probably heard a lot about, we included now $17,000 annually to the Minnesota State Horticulture Society and all the good work that they do. And then we also included $18,000 annually to the Minnesota Livestock Breeders Association. Again, this is something that's been in the bills in the past, and we're not included in the tails this time, but we are picking these up in our budget and then recommending that these do stay in the tails on into the future. So that is the pass-throughs that the governor is recommending. And then we are also recommending and have in our budget an additional $100,000 a year for farm safety grants. And so this is something that the department has had off and on in the budget over the last few years. I think Representative Anderson worked on this originally with the tractor rollover. So this would appropriate $100,000 in each year to fund farm safety grants. And that would include both the tractor rollover grants as well as the grain storage facility grants. And very important issues in our state. I think in 2019, Minnesota, we lost 10 Minnesotans in bins and in silos. And just this past week, we lost a three-year-old, and really thoughts to that family in a tragic farm accident. We can never, you know, keep farm safety up in the air. I'd also like to comment, too, with these dollars, too, we've also been able to secure some private funding the legislature allowed us to do, and that included a donation from Cargill and also the Minnesota Corn Growers to help with those funds. So that's the quick update on our budget. Those are the only changes that are proposed in the supplemental for agriculture, but I think they're important. Quickly on the federal funds, I wanted to update. There's really a couple things as you consider putting together your budget, and some of these things we may not know until after the budget's together and maybe even into conference committee, just the way that it's rolling out. But before I talk about the American Rescue Plan that just passed recently, I also wanted to talk about the spending omnibus end of the year relief package that Congress passed at the end of the year as they were going out the door in December that included $28 million in block grants to states for mental health. And each state is going to be eligible for about $500,000. And to help really help with farmer mental health. And for our state, I think that we're situated good to apply for these funds. And that could be maybe to help boost our advocate program. It's not ongoing dollars, but it's could help with some of the hotlines that we've done, some of the trainings we've done. We're also maybe able to partner with different organizations. So the department will be putting together a plan in applying for those. And some of those may be cross over with some of the things that we've applied for in our budget as well this year. Also included in that package was $60 million for small meat processing that'll flow to the states. But we're not sure if it's going to come through the State Department of Agriculture or through the USDA yet. And so that's one that we're watching. Then in the recently passed American, so we're watching those federal dollars as they come to the state. We're also looking at the American Rescue Plan that just passed as well. And as you may have heard, that $2.55 billion is coming directly to the state. There is also an agriculture package with that. And the agricultural package includes $4 billion for COVID relief, and most of those programs are going to come directly for the USDA and, again, would help with things like PPE for farmers, retooling, food processing. It would help, again, with small meat processing. There's also $5 billion for debt relief for farmers of color. And we're not sure, again, how those are going to roll out, but I don't think we may or may not have a role in those. But there's a lot of those dollars are going to flow to our state. But in the $2.55 billion, that is going to come directly to Minnesota. It's the intention of the Department of Agriculture to put together a package of programs, as we did last fall, that would help our farmers where we see impacted by COVID or our agricultural businesses in Minnesota. So we've been currently surveying, looking for ideas, and we intend to submit those to MMB in the coming weeks. As Mr. Jimenez, I was... kind of mentioned some of the programs we worked on last fall. You know, we worked on the hog depopulation, but we also did some of the great work through with Mr. Jimenez. And so we're looking at where in Minnesota are those barriers or who has been impacted by COVID that needs those federal dollars that they could be helpful. You know, meat processing definitely rises to the top. You can argue that meat processing has been impacted by COVID. We can look at different types of urban agriculture. The ethanol industry with people driving less, we know, has been impacted. The other piece that we're looking at, too, is food insecurity. So that is definitely, to me, in reading the rules, that is an eligible criteria that the department is looking at and working through that. So those are some of the ideas that we are continuing to look at and put forward. Again, we don't have a lot of details. The only one that we've heard so far is the mental health grant, But we're working day and night. Our staff is to put together different ideas and as we move forward here. It's going to be a pretty quick turnaround to get these put together by the middle of April or maybe even sooner. So with that, Mr. Chair, I stand for any questions.
We do have at least one question. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for walking us through the information that you have so far. just to ask a question related to what you were talking about at the end, I've been wondering about, I know local foods farmers were impacted by COVID, especially those that were connected to the farm to school program as schools shut down. So I'm wondering if there's, if they might be eligible for funding, and also if you could connect food insecurity needs with, you know, perhaps some infrastructure investments for farm to school to kind of help help that program keep going and build up again. I don't know if there's a, if that would fit in, but I know there's some needs in that space, both on the farmer side and on the school side too.
Mr. Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lippert, you know, those are the type of things that we're looking at, you know, not just farm to school, but also restaurants. And we did make some funding available to that with the CARES dollars too, that farmers that had lost some of that farm to school revenue. And that's one of the things we're looking at, not just that, but also the restaurant business, because, you know, we're, you know, the administration, other parts of the administration working on helping restaurants, but also farmers lost those direct sales to restaurants, which is really critical and important. And so, yes, all the above are things that we're considering and trying to see. And it's really hard too, because there's also federal programs that are rolling out at the same time. And so we don't want to necessarily be duplicative, but we do want to try to address that. So appreciate the suggestion. It's something that we're definitely looking at.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Anderson, please. You are muted.
Anyway, sorry again. Thanks, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Thanks for the update. Just a couple of quick questions. You mentioned some funding being released from that end of the year package that was passed in Washington. And also among that funding, there was money being withheld. I guess the new administration was doing some checking or whatever. So are you saying that that money now is going to be released, or just parts of it have been released here from that end of the year funding?
Commissioner Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, and I should have been, maybe nothing's been released yet, and maybe I didn't speak quite correctly, but it's been was appropriated, you know, and so that is the other difference. And I think there's actually news today on like the CFAP payments that Secretary Vilsack just released today, that they will be releasing. They did make some changes, but they are just announcing today. So we're hoping that those dollars will start to move. And the one that we do know is the mental health. We've met several times with the USDA, and we're in good spot for that that money. And so the meat processing is the one that we'd really like to know, because as you all know, I don't have to tell this committee the importance of that and how helpful that could be.
Thank you.
Anything further, Representative Anderson? Okay, thank you. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Sundin and Commissioner Peterson. Good to see you. The my question is, could some of the federal money be used for assisting with water quality certification? I know that elsewhere in the funds, there are wastewater and drinking water dollars that are kind of broad categories, and I'm checking to see if there are practices that could be incentivized with the federal money, for example, cover crops or one-time money that, or coming into compliance with the water quality certification program. Is there, have you explored that at all?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, you know, the interesting thing on the wording is I've looked into it, and we're digging into it more from an agricultural standpoint, is it has to be had an impact from COVID. And so on those type of programs, activities that, you know, it's easy to say on meat processing and different things that market disruptions on maybe certain crops and other things, but it's looking at tying it to COVID or the impact on that is something that We're open to, looking at and considering all options, but that's the one piece that, is important and might be a little tough to do.
Thank you. Probably the last question here. We're running up against the clock. Vice Chair Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Thompson, I just wanted to make a quick suggestion. I know that the lessons we learned from the pandemic, broadband is a huge issue and becoming basically a basic need. So I hope that's something that you are considering, and also, many farmers who are doing direct sales to consumers during the pandemic, they weren't able to thrive in the e-commerce areas because they didn't have the knowledge or the expertise to really expand to e-commerce. And right now we know that e-commerce is pretty much a thriving economy during this pandemic. So I hope that's something that you will consider to look to support farmers in transitioning or expanding their business into the e-commerce area too as well.
Mr. Peterson, you can respond.
Yep, and Mr. Chair and Representative Bang, those are great issues. You can see maybe that I'm in my office today. I had a trade mission with Taiwan this morning, and I had to have good, stable internet. As you know, maybe at my farm where I live in Pine County, we're 84th out of 87 in broadband, and I have six ways to get on the internet at my farm that hopefully one of them doesn't fail for that. And so I know that issue well as we look at that. But one of the most successful cares, and I'm glad you brought this up because I had it in my notes and I forgot to mention it. One of the most successful pieces we did in the CARES funding we got last year was establishing our e-commerce grants. And the best emails and messages we've gotten are from farmers where the e-commerce has grown their sales. Is really exciting to see. And so that is something else that we are looking to continue as we look forward. I also think just listening to the discussion today on the federal funding, on some of the urban farming and some of the emerging farmer pieces, might be something that we're also continuing to look at as building on the work that we did with LEDC and MEDA as well. So appreciate the comments.
Excuse me there. This is the last meeting we're going to hear it. Individual bills. We expect a delete all amendment for the omnibus finance bill to be posted. Pop-ups. I don't like pop-ups. To be posted on Tuesday, April 5th or 6th, and we'll vote it out later that week. So please watch your emails for any details on that. The ag target is 11.5 million increase in fiscal year 22-23 and 9.6 million increase in the tails. So I expect the commissioner will be keeping us up to date on the federal money coming through. So that's all the information I have for the committee at this point, and we are adjourned.